Hey, this is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction show. Truth, because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Because I'm happy. Clap along. Welcome to LOA Today, Walt Thiessen, Joel Elston. It's Thursday, January 28th, 2016. And we were talking just before we went on the air about how time seems to be flying. We're at the end of January, Joel, and it's, I mean, like you were saying before, we're still getting used to being in 2016, and we just lost the first month.
My perception of time has certainly increased. What an amazing first month this has been, but the fact that it's already here, we're already at the end, it just seems amazing to me.
And we were talking about how the perception is that time just is speeding up. You mentioned how even among very younger generation, they feel like time is going so much faster. And I'm not sure exactly how much of that is due to, you know, what we can do today compared to what we couldn't do, you know, 50 years ago in terms of technologies and access to information and all that kind of thing. But I do think there is one good piece of information that comes out of it, which is it's a reminder for us to stay in the moment. Because the longer we stay in the moment, the less I think the time seems to fly by because we're in the moment.
That's a good exercise to work on because it helps your perception, I think, is what the answer is. And you know, whether you have access to all, it used to be you had to wait for answers. You have access to answers immediately. If you want something, Amazon can now bring it to you in an hour.
No.
So, you know, the idea that we don't wait for anything, I think, makes a lot of things happen at a lot quicker pace and, again, speeds up perception. But regardless of the reason, when you're living in the now, when you're living in that moment and being sort of focused on where you're at, it doesn't go as fast. And I think that's an exercise that we can all continue to work on.
It's certainly something that a lot of people have been needing to work on, expressing a need to work on over the past week. I mean, last weekend we had that big snowstorm on the east coast of the U.S., and talk about more snow coming in the forecast up on the upcoming weekend. One of the most common themes that we've seen, you and I talked about this as well, is people complaining about the snow. And on the other side of the coin, there is a smaller minority, apparently smaller, that loves the snow. And it makes for an interesting topic, I think, the weather and the law of attraction from a number of different perspectives and from a number of different angles, including how people decide to feel about snow.
Well, that is such one of the great descriptions of the law of attraction that I always heard or always felt was accurate was you're being in control of your perspective, learning to control your perspective of what is going on. Everybody's, you know, one man's prison is another man's joy, and I've heard that from various people who've experienced certain things. And I think when we look at it, applying it to the weather, the snow happened last week. I was in the Richmond, Virginia area, and we pretty much were snowed in for 2 days. And I could either focus on the fact that I was snowed in for 2 days, or that I had 2 days of opportunity to do a lot of these projects in the house that I needed to get done. I had some paperwork I needed to get caught up on. So I was sort of given an opportunity to fill that void of the stuff I really needed to get done. So I was grateful for the time off. I usually don't slow down enough to do those things. So the perspective of what is happening, and especially using the weather as an analogy, is simply in control of what's happening. The snowstorm, we're not in control of, but the idea of how we're viewing that gives us complete control. And I think that's where the law of attraction, using it to your advantage, is inviting more opportunities for positive things to happen when your perspective is adjusted for positive.
Well, maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, you mentioned that we're really not in control of whether the snow comes, but I'm not so sure that's true. And let me tell you why. It's kind of funny, really. Personally, I have a long history of influencing weather, and we can go into that in greater detail. But regarding the snow from last weekend, now, most people didn't want the snow to happen, but my wife did because Louise bought some cross-country skis earlier this year, and she hasn't had any opportunity to use them. So she's been dying for the snow to come. and so as a result, when we heard that the snow was coming, she was really excited when we first heard that our initial forecast, I believe, was for 6 to 10 inches, and she was just ecstatic. And then over the days, it fell down to 3 to 6 inches, and then 1 to 3 inches, and she got mad. She didn't feel despondent. She got mad. She said, "No, I need at least 6 inches on the ground because I want to go skiing. To heck with what all the other people say. I want the snow on the ground." So by the time the snow came around, guess what happened to the forecast just before it started to hit? Went back up to 3 to 6 inches, and of course we ended up with snow on the ground, and you know she's able to go skiing. But there's a little bit of a lesson in that because she was focused on what she wanted where the snow was concerned. Now there's also a second lesson. The second lesson is all these people who are complaining about the snow, saying, "No, I don't want the snow to come." Well, guess what, folks? If you focus on snow, you're going to get snow. You don't want snow, you start focusing on blue skies and sun and green fields. You don't focus on snow. So you have this entire East Coast focusing on snow. Guess what they get?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they get loaded with the snow.
Absolutely.
And that, I've heard the week before that storm last week, every news break, everything you heard was the impending storm.
Yeah, right.
and they actually use these potentially historic storm.
Oh yeah.
And they every weather break or every break on TV, or not that I watch that much, but when I was around, that's all you heard. People were talking about it for the week ahead, and my response always was, it's going to happen what's going to happen, and I'm going to be pleased with whichever way it turns out. And so for me, I don't know how this neutral effect works, but my response was, whether it's coming or not, I'm going to take full advantage of either it not being here or that it is here. And that puts you in a great position. So no matter what happens, I'm in a place where I feel like last weekend was very productive for me. And that helps.
That does help. And in fact, the what you call the neutral position is basically saying, I'm not going to try to attract anything deliberately, but whatever comes, I'm going to choose to feel happy about it.
Yes.
So you aren't really concerned about trying to attract snow or drive snow away or shovel snow or anything else. You're just saying, ooh, how pretty the snow is. Oh, how green the grass is in the spring. Oh, how comfortable that breeze is. Ooh, how cool that breeze is. I mean, no matter what the weather is, you choose to feel good about it.
And that becomes sort of the mantra of you know, I look at it in a sense that there's people that don't have a place to sleep. There are people that don't have electricity. I did not lose electricity at all during the snow. I had everything that I needed. I even though I had plenty of food, I could have, trust me, I would have gone fine without a couple of days worth of food anyway, but I had plenty of room. I had plenty of cushion in that area. But I had a lot of opportunity to focus on, oh, I'm stuck here, or I can't get out, or I can't do this, or the limitations of what I could make the snow a limiting factor, or I can make the snow a liberating factor. And the snow liberated a lot of stuff that I wasn't taking the time to do that I really needed to do. So I sort of needed that snow to happen so I could get some pre-tax work done, so I can get some case notes done.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you're mentioning people who are homeless, people who are exposed to the elements and so forth, a lot of people will hear that and they'll say, oh, how we have to feel so sorry for those people. And I don't think that's really what you're saying, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I'm using that as an example for me looking at what my current situation. Those people, I have, and I have been one of, quote-unquote, those people. So I attracted my homelessness when I was homeless. I attracted that. My thought process brought me there, and I had no one to blame but my thought process, me and my thought process. So the idea that I when I look at people on the streets, not that I have an empathy because I have lived it, but I don't feel sorry for them. And there is a difference, obviously. I have an understanding of what they're going through, but I believe 100% that is part of that individual's life journey. One of the greatest things that ever happened to me was homelessness. And that not that the homelessness was exciting, but it was something that was a needed turning point in my life that eventually would became a very part of a pivotal point in my life that I just thought was necessary in retrospect. So while it was going on, there was nobody telling me, okay, you're homeless eating out of a trash can, this is going to be good one day, but it certainly was.
Now, other people are going to listen to that, and they're going to say, what a heartless, you know what, he is. I mean, just think of the story of the guy from a couple of weeks ago, the 69-year-old vet from San Francisco, I think it was, who froze to death in his own home because they turned the power off.
Yes.
And they're saying in their minds, well, Joel doesn't really care about the fact that he froze to death. All he seems to care about is, well, it was this great opportunity. And like, well, you know, what kind of an idiot is he? And that's what you're saying at all, but that's what people are going to think.
Right, and that's one of the hardest things that most people have when it comes to law of attraction, and I think we're on our continued streak of saying this every week, but the law of attraction has no emotion. It isn't worried or concerned about stuff like that. It doesn't have a moral factor attached to it. It is just simply, you know, the law of gravity. When someone falls off of a building and dies, you know, a window washer falls off a building and dies, you know, nobody's saying, damn that gravity, damn that it's just accepted as that's what happens. And
yeah, that's true. When you see the news forecast, the news report that talks about the guy who jumped off the 30-story building to his death, they don't talk about how the gravity killed him.
Right. And that's exactly how the law of attraction works. I cannot imagine how horrifying it would be to lose a family member because somebody had their power turned off. That's a totally separate topic than what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the circumstances that we find ourselves in. We're attracting them. That doesn't mean that we're at fault or we're bad or this is evil. We just don't know we're attracting them. Once you understand you have the key to your life, your perspective brings about everything in your life, and when you control that, that's how you change that environment. So it does come across as heartless, and I certainly don't mean it to be. As you know, I do a lot of work. I volunteer at homeless shelters.
Oh yeah, anybody who knows you knows that heartless is about as far away from you as could possibly exist.
Right, because I go out and we make sure that, you know, my community, whatever I can do in my community to help with that. However, I tell people, when I work with the homeless people, I go take coats to homeless people every week. And when I do, I explain the law of attraction. I explain what they've gotten into. I offer where there's help. And I've actually been told, I had one man that was begging on the side of the road, and I stopped, handed him a coat. He told me thank you, and I said, I have this program that I can take you to. They will help you get you launched. I said, your circumstances, what you're attracting. And he just looked at me and goes, I'm good, thanks. He says, okay. That's no problem there.
Exactly. I mean, that's basically him saying, I'm very content with where I am.
Yes. And I'm fine with that. So I don't need to argue with him or try to debate that. So, yes, it separates. This was one of the biggest pieces, and it continues to be the biggest piece, of why people have a hard time accepting the use of the law of attraction in your life. Because it comes across, you know, I often hear, what about children who were abused? What about children who die? What about, certainly, no one here is saying these are things we're proud of or we're pleased with or we don't care about. It's just understanding how things happen.
And more than that, we have great hope. I mean, one of the reasons you and I do this show is we want to reach people who are ready to make change, who are ready to improve their lot in life, no matter how bad it might be. You do it regularly off the show, you know, in your own life. But one of our big dreams, I'm sure, I'm speaking for you on this, is wouldn't it be great if the entire world's population of homeless people actually learned and understood how the law of attraction works so that if they want to change and they want to get their lives into better circumstances, they could every single time. Because that's
Absolutely.
What it enables them to do. It gives them the power. It personally empowers people to change their circumstances. And that's ultimately the best way to change the world.
I completely agree. If we could ever get that message out to the the suffering, as I like to call it, the suffering people, the homeless people, even the sick people, and when you understand the power of our thoughts, and you really, we assume that our reality is based on what's happening to us, is that that's sort of how we're programmed. Life is going to happen, and we're going to, we're sort of powerless in this whole, we're victims on this ship in the middle of nowhere. And we just have to hope that the forces of the universe work on our behalf.
Which is exactly what we've been trained to think.
We've been trained to believe that. When in reality, we are in control of everything because we're in control of our perspective. That is the human superpower is our perspective. I'm in control of that. When I realize that, I can't stop but not defeating myself. I have to stop defeating myself. When I don't do it, because I now know that my perspective is in my direct control. And this is as we go forward, as you go forward. I want this message to get out there that we do control our reality through our perspective, since our reality is controlled by our perspective. I know that sounds totally crazy.
And it makes no sense. It's hard to express. It is.
Yeah. But it really is how it's, especially since we're taught the other way. You know, it's like we were born into a society that really believes that all of this stuff is out of our control. And when so much of it is, we have so much control over our thoughts, which create our perspective, and then our reality, that it's amazing. That's the most powerful force in the universe is our thoughts.
And I think that's one reason why I thought that talking about the weather and the law of attraction this week would be such a good topic, because it's a rather innocuous way, relatively speaking, compared to being homeless and starving and all that kind of stuff, or having a dread disease, or being lonely because you don't find the right relationship, or you know, whatever it might be. It's relatively innocuous, and as a result, it makes it easier to look at, you know, in individual case examples of how you don't have to be trapped by weather. You can actually change your perspective and appreciate it, and you can actually influence it too. I've had numerous experiences in my own life where I have literally changed the weather. Louise, this past weekend, she wanted more snow. They started reducing the snow forecast, and they said, no, that's good enough, not good enough. She wanted more snow. And sure enough, on the day that the storm hit Connecticut, I'm in northern Connecticut, on the day that the storm hit Connecticut, all of a sudden, all the models shifted, and northern Connecticut was going to start getting more snow than was originally forecast. I mean, come on, people. How much more evidence do you need? The everybody was agreeing northern Connecticut was going to get next to nothing. And then the numbers kept going down and down and down, and Louise said, no, I want more snow, and all of a sudden we get more snow. Well, people are going to say, oh, that's just coincidence. That, I mean, you know, you can't go by one forecast. Okay, you can't go by one forecast. But what I can go by is time after time influencing the weather successfully. As you know, Joel, one of my favorite things to do is to go walking. And we have what they call the Rails to Trails paths near our home. In fact, there's one that goes right past the drive to our home. So I love it. I mean, I go out the house and I go down to the path and I can just walk for miles in either direction, and it's great. And you're out in nature. It's a really nice way to go. Well, there are many times when I go out and the weather isn't quite the way I wanted it to be. You know, maybe it's spring and it's threatening rain and I want the sun, or maybe it's wintertime and it's cold and there's a bitter wind blowing and I want the wind to stop blowing because then it's more comfortable to walk, you know, that kind of thing. So there are a number of different weather conditions that can occur. I can't tell you how many times, how many times I've been able to go out on a walk, find the conditions weren't the way I wanted to, and said, you know what? I want to shift them a bit because this isn't quite right. I want to feel better about this walk. And those times where I focused primarily on the bad conditions, the conditions got worse. But those times that I was somehow managing to change my imagination, to actually convince my subconscious mind, the various parts of my brain that do imaging, to convince it that what I was seeing and feeling was not what was actually out there, but instead I was seeing and feeling something else. To the degree I was able to do that, every time, Joel, I'm able to shift the weather. Now, can I shift the weather such that if it's 30 degrees out, I can shift it to 70 degrees in 5 seconds? No, I'm not that strong yet. I haven't gotten there yet. But every time I can shift the weather, I can literally, Joel, be walking down that path, look up in the sky, and see this little circle of blue above me, and there's clouds in all directions everywhere else because I wanted to have blue sky.
This is where so many people, this will probably be a show where people will listen and say, okay, now they're losing me.
Yeah, right. They probably will, because it's so far out of most people's experience.
Right, but the you know, I have a couple of examples as well. When I had a, when my son last year, or actually almost, you know, a year and a half ago passed away, we had a, down on Anna Maria Island where the bench that I go to often, my book is written about the bench, and we had a memorial service, and it was a Saturday, and Florida was in the middle of, it had rained heavily. The front was stationed off, just off Tampa Bay, and it had rained heavily for several days, and I flew into town, and they had a record amount of rainfall. I drove down to the island, and it was raining, and my mom had called me, and she said, "What are we going to do if it's raining?" I said, "Well, I said, I'm still going to be there. Anyone that's comfortable, I'm going to be there. It doesn't matter. I'm going to still do this." So everything was fine. We had the memorial service. It was raining at the house we had it at. The rain tapered. It stopped. We walked down to the bench. It was not sunny, but the rain had stopped. And we had the memorial service for about 20 minutes right at the exact bench where his remains had been spread. Then we went to his favorite restaurant, which is about a mile away, to have hamburgers. And when we walked in the door of the restaurant, the skies opened up again.
Mm.
And it literally, when people that lived there said, there's been an hour and a half period in the last 12 days that it hadn't rained. And it was for TJ's memorial service.
Wow.
Now,
yeah.
That really, again, the coincidence or God or whatever whatever everybody's going to be calling that, my response, again, I always sort of take this neutral response. I was going to go down to that memorial service if it were a hurricane. It wouldn't have mattered to me. I was still going to approach it that way. But I was, I said to myself, it will be fine. We'll be able to have it. It won't be a problem. And I just dismissed the weather as a factor.
Yes, and that is a big part of it. You have to dismiss the weather as a factor, particularly as a negative factor.
Yes, and that because see, just like you're talking about with the people, I don't want snow. They're still inviting snow.
Yeah, right.
And that's the hard thing to understand.
It's the most bizarre part of the law of attraction. That took me, that concept of focusing on what you don't want, attracting it. That was the one that took me a couple years to come to grips with because it's just so bizarre.
Well, because it doesn't match, because you were saying, well, Louise wanted more snow, so she got it. Now, other people didn't want snow, but yet they got it.
And the one explanation that helped me at least get started understanding it is that the universe does not understand negation. There's no such thing. There either is or there is not. So when we say there is not, we're using the word negation to say that. But another way to say it is there is either abundance or there is lack. And you really, there's nothing else.
Well, and this becomes the hardest part, as you're saying, for people to tune into. It was one of the hardest parts for me to take it where, if I would have thought that day, okay, I just can't have rain. I can't have rain. I got to have this. I just can't have rain. That would have been me attracting rain.
Right.
It would have. So me taking a stance that I'm having my memorial service, weather is not a factor to me. Period. It did not matter. I had no opinion on the weather. I had no strong. I was going to go down there regardless of the circumstance and be there. Period. There was an hour and a half period that it didn't rain, and that was the hour and a half period that we had. I find that amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
And so the you know, the idea that what we want and what we don't want in the law of attraction, unfortunately, we're getting all, you had the, it wasn't Louise, in my mind, it wasn't Louise that increased the rain as much as it, of the snow, as much as everybody up there saying, no, we don't want snow. You had everybody, including Louise, pulling in the same direction, even though it appeared not to be.
It's just that Louise was doing the cheerleading.
Exactly. And you know, it's the idea of that is when we say what we don't want, or we worry about stuff, or we focus on stuff in that negative context, it literally is like praying for what we don't want. It's just begging for what we don't want. And that's why it becomes such a hard factor for people to understand. Just like when we were talking earlier about the homeless people. They're not wanting to be homeless. I'm not claiming that they're praying to be homeless. They haven't quite figured out how they're attracting homelessness into their life. And that's the big difference. And that's why the message is so important, because the law of attraction isn't fair. It isn't like it's a benevolent force at work evening things out. It works for everybody. It's just the ones that use it to their advantage have figured out how to do it.
Right. In that sense, it's totally fair. The reason we say it's unfair is that we expect everything to be equalized, and that never happens.
Well, yeah, unfair in the traditional human sense.
Right.
Gravity is completely fair.
Yes, it is.
It is totally fair. It never varies from, and I keep using that comparison because it's so accurate.
Mm-hmm.
The law of attraction isn't attached to that, but we put human standards, or what false human standards, what we've developed as standards, on the law of attraction. Say, well, it's not fair that this person keeps getting more, and these people keep suffering. It's mm-hmm. not it. You know, I heard somebody the other day say, talking about Tom Brady, and he said, it's really not fair. You know, Tom Brady's this great quarterback. He's a good-looking man. He's got a great-looking wife. He's had a life for, and I laughed. I go, why isn't that fair? And it's just, he just got too much. And I go, Tom Brady's attitude is what's attracting to him what he has.
And what's inherent in their statement is the idea that he has too much, meaning that he's taken some away from me.
Exactly. And that's where people get out of balance, because there's an abundance for everyone. There is no one who doesn't have access to this same power. And that's the piece that a lot of people, that's when people start getting resentful, and they want to say, oh no, that's not accurate because I suffer from this condition, or this doesn't apply to me. You know, there's multiple stories of people with absolutely just overwhelming odds, just turning it around and making their life incredible.
Now, of course, one question that ends up in a lot of people's minds, particularly when we're doing these mental jujitsus where we're talking about how you focus something on negatively and you end up attracting it. It's like, what the heck? How the heck am I supposed to make this work? And as it turns out, there's a very easy way to make it work. That is to watch the way you express things. Do you express things negatively, or do you express things positively? For instance, where snow is concerned, do you say, oh God, I don't want any more snow, I don't want any more snow? That's a negative expression that says, don't snow. The positive expression gets you the result you're looking for, which is, I want clear weather. I want green grass. Well, green grass, you don't see the green grass if there's snow on it, do you? So therefore, if you're trying to avoid snow, you don't think in terms of no snow, you think in terms of yes, green grass. That's the trick. You have to turn your thoughts into positive expressions. And if those of us who are learning to do that, and I stress learning, we make lots of mistakes too, but those of us who are learning to twist our thoughts around and say, anytime that I'm going into a negative space and saying I'm going to express something negatively, oops, stop myself. What's the opposite? What's the positive way of saying that of whatever it is I'm trying to hope for or look for or think about or do or whatever? Just change it around to the positive. And when you do that, all of a sudden everything starts to make sense. Everything starts to work the way you expect it would.
Yes. And that answer that you just given, the answer of the really the dilemma for most people facing it, because they can't quite tune into the concept, and that's the ongoing process. I think even the greatest practitioners of the law of attraction have only scratched the surface of its power.
Oh yeah, yeah, and there's so much power there to be gotten too. I mean, man, I just imagine where our world is going to be in, say, 100 years, and just how farther advanced we're all going to be in terms of being able to apply our positive desires to our environment. I mean, it's going to be an amazing place to live.
It will. I can't wait when we're talking about it. That's going to be great.
In fact, I want to extend my life so I can be part of it.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not. Yeah, I plan on us talking that Saturday to Thursday, wherever we're going to be that week. Yeah, I'm excited that for the future, and that you hear that a lot when you watch the news, you hear all the negatives that are going on in the world.
Well, I don't listen to the news. I can't stand all the negatives.
Exactly. It is bringing about, their job is to attract audiences and sell commercials. That's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what has proven, again, because we're conditioned, what has proven is to attract ratings is playing into people's fears.
That's right.
The fear of the storm, the week before the storm. Oh, you! Everybody's tuning in. How bad is it going to be? How bad is the storm going to be? You know, the trucks are ready to roll, and the emergency crews are ready, and so everybody's amped up for the storm on a negative basis.
Mm-hmm.
The Middle East problem has been going on long before the United States even existed.
Oh yeah,
and but yet somehow we're in the midst of it, and we argue, well, this is the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, when it's really, you know, not to get political, but it has really nothing to do with my happiness right now at home, period.
That's right.
And I think...
And by the way, our involvement over there has nothing to do with their happiness either.
Exactly. It really, there's a whole lot of reasons why we're there, but it's not probably the reason why we should be there. as we don't do, we won't get into a political discussion, it does have an effect on how we view things, because I had my youngest son Chris one day I didn't know he was watching. He watches a lot of Sports Center and stuff, and so he not really watching the news, but he keeps up with sports related issues. So one day we were driving, and he said, "It is really sad that Tiger Woods raped those women."
Mm.
And I was like, "Chris, what are you talking about? He didn't rape anybody."
Mm.
He said, "Well, all those women that I said, no, son. First of all, he had an affair, allegedly, and that created some chaos in his life. Under no circumstances did he rape anyone. I don't know where you got that from." Well, he was just assuming, because of the intense coverage and about these women, he just made an assumption.
Yeah.
And it was a very negative assumption, and he had a very negative view of Tiger Woods after that. I said, "You know, son, whether you agree or disagree with his actions, but he certainly didn't commit a crime, and that's really it shows you how quickly your mind can go to the negative."
It also shows how quickly we're able to cast blame onto others, because there are a lot of people who would say he did commit a crime. He committed a crime against his wife, against his kids, and so on and so forth. And you know, at some point, you wonder where it is that people who are insisting on taking this position, at what point are they willing to say someone is responsible for what happens to themselves?
Yes.
Because it doesn't sound like they believe that.
Well, no, it doesn't. Well, the role, the society of victims is a much, I believe that is an unintentional force at work to make a society of victims. It you hear it every day.
It sounds like it's a nonprofit organization. Join the society of victims.
It does. And I think that, and the law of attraction is anti-victim. And I think that's why people get upset about it, is we are conditioned to say, you are a victim of things, so it's not your fault. Well, the law of attraction is basically saying, you're bringing this about, guy. Like it or not, you're bringing it about. Boom.
Your $25 contribution will ensure that there are more victims in the world today.
Exactly, there are not enough victims in the world. but you with the concept of if you remember, I'll give a quick recap. But I talked about a young man named Bob a while back who had he was in foster care. He is in foster care, and he had been given this list of all of his ailments. You know, he was obsessive compulsive, oppositional defiant, ADHD, and he told me when he repeated that to me, I was like, who told you that silliness? And he really had bought into all these labels. Long story short is he got rid of all those labels and is thriving in an incredible environment now. We'll probably have a follow-up show on him in a month or two, but he's doing great. However, I hear this all the time where people will say, well, I have this problem or I have that problem and I can't, so I'm on disability. I have often stated the biggest disability a human being can have is being on disability. Period.
That's a tough pill for people to swallow.
Yes. Now, there as always, there's a caveat to this. There are people who are profoundly mentally retarded or physically disabled. I am not speaking to that crowd. I'm not. That they have issues, they certainly need help, and that's the reason for disability in my mind.
And isn't it interesting that among the caregivers who work with that crowd, the number one thing that they're focused on is trying to empower them to make choices and live their own lives, the direct opposite of what those who want to point to that crowd want to imply.
Exactly. And that is what there's this family that I worked with a long time ago, and I have never made it relevant to the law of attraction to this exact moment as we're talking. It's a wonderful, she's an African-American mom. This is down in Florida, and she had three or four kids. And I was actually a director of a residential program for severely disabled or mentally retarded children.
So I
was director there for a while. And we were given a referral from the social service worker, but she has a son who had no legs. And he was getting older, and as he was getting older, the assumption was that she would need more help. She was a single mom, and we were prepared to provide residential services for her son.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went out to make the presentation and tell her that the advantage of her son being in a program, we could all the stuff we could do for him, all the services we could provide. Well, let's just say the young man's name was Charles, and
sure.
She looked at me when I explained to her. She said, "Well, why are you here?" And I said, "Well, you know, in case you wanted residential service for your son." She goes, "What does that mean?" And I said, "Well, he would live with us, and we'd provide." And she goes, "Why would I do that?" Well, in the meantime, I hear her yell, you know, again, very firm, strong woman. She said, "Charles, get in there and mop the floor." Well, I'm trying to figure out. Charles is the kid. I knew that. Well, she had devised this thing, took a big mop head, sort of, and made like a seat on it, and he drug himself around with his arms mopping the floor.
So much for not being able to do anything.
Yeah, and so as we were going, she said, "Well, I got to talk to these gentlemen." She said, "You guys go to the basketball court." I just watched as the brother picked up Charles, threw him on his back, grabbed the basketball, and they walked down to the court.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, at that point, I go, "Never mind." I said, "You guys have a great day. You're doing a great job."
Yeah, and they get it. That's the thing. They get it.
It wasn't even an option. It wasn't something that she would even consider. She didn't view her son. Yes, he had issues, but he was a very functional child.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled himself into bed. He showered himself. He really got around really well. And she did not treat him as a disability. She yelled at him like the other kids, and "You get down to the basketball court and get out of my hair." And nobody complained. They just figured it out.
In fact, one of the most common reactions you hear from so-called disabled people when they're interviewed is, "Don't think of me as disabled."
Right.
"I don't think of me as disabled, so please don't you think of me as disabled."
But we as a society want to do that and so want to call them that or feel that way. So the idea that you know, I believe that so many people there are people that are believing they're on disability that aren't disabled to the level they believe. When, to me, disability means you aren't able to do anything. This young man, Charles, certainly, while he had some issues, I don't consider him disabled. Disabled means he couldn't do anything. He could do quite a bit.
Yeah, because there is a difference between disabled and having limitations.
There, exactly. Limitations can be something you just simply overcome. Disabled means the ability has been removed. And there are people, Walt, there are people in this world who don't have functional brains, that their bodies are paralyzed, their minds are paralyzed, and there's not anything they can do. That's not the group I'm talking about again. I'm talking about the group of people that, have you ever pulled up to, again, not to judge, but you pull up to a store and you're walking up and somebody's in the handicap zone and they get out and they start walking toward the door?
Mm-hmm.
And I've often wondered, I wonder what that handicap is.
Yeah, right.
You know, it
well, I think we do know. I mean, because we already know in general what the handicap is. The handicap is a selection of default.
Yes.
It's not just among people who have handicap stickers. It's among the population as a whole. There are huge numbers of people who live by default, who think by default, and who believe that default is life.
Well, I have heard caseworkers when people have said, okay, I'm ready to go to work. I'm ready to get out of my life and go to work. I've heard caseworkers of people on disability say, be careful, if you make too much money, you'll lose your disability.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there's truth in it.
Well, there is. I know a young man. He was on disability, and lately they've really cracked down on who's on disability. And he called me. I did work with him years ago, and he said, I don't know what to do. They've cut off my disability. And he goes, and he was really serious when he said this, and I could not help but laugh. He goes, I'm going to have to go to work now. I just laughed. I was like, just like you, I'm like, yeah, you are. So it becomes, and again, this is not about, you know, this might be hate mail, email week after I get done with the show, but it isn't about disrespecting people or not having empathy for people, but understanding that we have so much more control over what takes place in our lives, but yet we tend to focus on the things that are out of our control, other people's behavior, other people's things that are going on. But when we focus on what's in our control and apply the law of attraction, it's limitless what we bring to our lives.
Yeah, what does this say about somebody who makes it their mission in life to focus on being out of control?
Yes. Yes.
As opposed to somebody who focuses on, you know what, I'm in total control of my life. What does that say? To me, it says that the people who focus on everything being outside of their control, they're the people who are saying, I want to be a victim.
Yes.
They're volunteers for victimhood, and they're saying it as loudly and as often as they humanly possibly can. And, of course, the universe, being dutifully, you know, true to the law of attraction, says, okay, I heard you the first 100 times, no problem.
Well, it that's exactly the point. And through all the teachings of the law of attraction, this is where, you know, everybody gets stuck. The idea that this is what it is, and by not wanting it, you're actually inviting it the way you're not wanting it. It's about focus. You said it so eloquently earlier. Let's focus on what we want and quit focusing on what we don't want.
And more importantly, recognize that focusing on what we don't want is not the same thing as focusing on what we want, because that's where we get stuck. We get stuck on the idea that if I express what it is I don't want, that I am saying what I want, and it's not true.
Right.
It's never been true in the history of the world. But people treat it as if it were true. Well, no, it's not. So stop it, folks. Start focusing on what you want and stop thinking that every time that you say what you don't want, you've really said what you want. You have not. Neither have I. And I know from personal experience, every time that I've said, I don't want that, I regret it later on.
Well, I was working with a lady last week who has had chronic pain issues, and she's tried all types of things, and she's trying to get off pain medication. And so what we were I was trying to get her in a mindset of you know, health. And I said, without using the word pain, describe what you want.
Boy, there's a challenge for somebody who's in pain. That's a really good challenge, a very, very good one, and an important one.
It is. And after about 30 minutes, she tried, and she said, oh, my God, my focus is solely on pain. Because she couldn't come up with what health looked like without for her without using pain in the word, or descriptive discomfort or whatever. I said, she tried all the adjectives of pain. I said, no, that counts as pain. So let's start talking about what you really want. You want to you want to be able to exercise again. You want to be able to run. You want to be able to pick up your kids. You want to be able. And so I listed about 100 things really quick what she was looking to do.
And in fact, the opposite of feeling pain is activities of various kinds.
Exactly, because she has been, in her mind, been debilitated by the pain.
Yep.
And so as this process throughout that session, and I talked to her a couple times during the week, and she said that when the pain started to come back, she noticed that it was attached to when she felt limitations on what she could do. And, for example, her daughter called and said, can you pick up my, you know, something at the store? I don't know if I'll be able to lift that or what, you know, and then her pain came back.
Yep.
And so when her daughter called, you know, later in the week, said, would you be able to stop and get to you? Absolutely, I'll be glad to pick that up for you. Picked it up, never thought about it, no pain.
And by the way, there are words that are the opposite of pain.
Yeah.
Like feeling good. Feeling good is the opposite of pain.
Yes.
You know, what we want, some of us will want to say, I know I've done this, I've wanted to say that I was pain-free, and of course that still focuses on pain.
Right.
But feeling good is actually what we mean when we try to say pain-free. It means I'm feeling good, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I mean, I feel great. I my body just feels good. I mean, good.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, good is the opposite of pain.
It is. And when also people who are in the middle of pain, what I call pain addiction, where they're really, the pain is the point of their life, one of the reasons I break it out even further than feeling good and have them explain what feeling good is because they've sort of lost the concept of, you know, what does feeling good mean to you? When you say, I want to feel good, what are you really thinking? Well, that means I'm thinking, I don't want to have pain. I go, no.
No, it's, you want to feel relaxed, you want to feel energetic, you want to feel, yeah. That's the best word I know.
That's perfect. And so walking through pain recovery with people can be a very, very difficult thing until they really grasp it. It's one of the best, once people grasp it who've been through pain, they really have a good understanding of it, because pain is a perfect example of the law of attraction and what's going on.
And if you're in pain and you're in suffering and you're finding it difficult to come up with the language, and I understand, because I've numerous times noticed that there is a lack of positive language. We have tons of negative language and very little positive language.
Yes.
By comparison. But there, I can recommend a really good activity. We talked about activity a few moments ago. I can recommend a wonderful, easy activity that anyone can do that will change the mindset instantly. For me, that activity is watching Robin Williams on an old recording of Inside the Actor's Studio. I don't know if you ever saw that show, Joel. Back around 2001, he was on Inside the Actor's Studio on Bravo TV. And he for like an hour and a half, he was on. I mean, he was just on. To the point where, like, the first 5 minutes, if you aren't falling out of your chair laughing, it means you weren't paying attention. Because it's just that funny. But even if it's not Robin Williams for you, find something to laugh at. Find, you know, we have the internet available to us. You know what makes you laugh, what you find funny. Go find a recording of whatever that is and play it on YouTube. And just watch it and then make sure, this is so important, make sure that when the funny parts come and you get the little signal inside that says that's funny, that you physically laugh. One of the worst things you can do is to try to get yourself into this kind of positive situation, get that kind of positive situation overload into place and then not use it. And I see this a lot. You probably see it a lot too with what you do, Joel, where people, I know one person, I mentioned him to you privately one time recently. He just recently got diagnosed with cancer. And I remember having a conversation with him shortly after that in which I mentioned to him the value of laughter. He says, I laugh all day long. We were with him and his wife all day. He didn't laugh once. He told some jokes, and you could see on his face that he thought they were funny, but he didn't laugh. We told some jokes. You could see on his face that he thought they were funny, but he didn't laugh. And by failing to laugh, he failed to give himself the one thing he needed most of all, healing power. So that's why I'm spending this time on this. This is vitally important. You want to turn the pain around? You want to turn the dread disease around? Laugh. And this isn't just law of attraction. This is science. Medical science has proven through case studies, through actual scientific studies, that when people laugh, they increase their ability to heal themselves.
It's such a tool to be able to implement in your life. Humor, putting yourself in a mindset, like I said, literally laughing, not just smirking and a deep belly laugh, that releases a lot of quality chemicals in your body.
It really does.
Very healing, very antidepressant, and the body, as I believe, as you believe, has the ability to heal itself from anything, period.
It does.
It's just us getting the body, and you have to feed it proper foods to do it, and then you have to have the proper mindset for it to happen. Those two things need to happen, and your body will heal itself. But again, when you're told you have incurable blah, 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 fill in the blank, it becomes incurable blah, blah, blah if you believe it.
Who was the guy who participated on the movie The Secret who said when he hears the word incurable, he thinks of it in terms of being curable from within?
Yes. Yeah, and that gets into a whole other topic one day that we can do on the show, is how to take the negative words and make new definitions for them.
Yeah,
and really, really start applying that, because when you really believe internally curable is what incurable means, that has a whole new connotation for you.
And that's the trick. That's the whole trick. It's really a mind game.
It is, and that. When we get back into the default pattern of negative thinking, it keeps bringing us back to the same patterns of what we fight. I'm amazed at my clients that keep having the same set of problems over a period of 10, 15 years that they've always had. They just manifest a little differently, but it's the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, do you see a pattern here? You know, when I have the show,
you have to see the pattern, otherwise you can't change it.
Exactly,
so that's a really important question.
I asked this lady I've done work with battered women before, and one of the very first case I ever worked with, I had this long form to fill out, and she'd gotten into an emergency care treatment situation, and I was trying to get her all the services that she could, her and her kids, and one of my first questions, I said, okay, did your previous anyone in your previous relationship abuse you? She goes, my father did. And I said, well, I'm sorry to hear that. And she goes, well, my first boyfriend did. Yeah, my second boyfriend did. My first husband did. My fiance after that did. I'm like, oh, my God. I said, have you ever had a relationship that someone didn't physically abuse you? And she goes, no. I'm like, now, I was in my infancy of doing this stuff, and I remember thinking to myself, wow, there must be something she's attracted to in that.
Talk about a perfect record, you know?
Oh, and it turns out, you know, she left care. Her abusive husband, who had hurt her pretty bad, picked her up about 12 hours after she arrived, and she went back for some more beatings. And there are people who will, again, say, well, that's sort of heartless the way you're referring to that. No, she started attracting that into her life. Does that mean she's at fault when a man beats her? No, I don't mean that. Whoever does that deserves criminal charges. There's nothing that I'm trying to decide with the man that's beating her. But you can clearly see where she keeps attracting the same person into her life.
And at some point, if she wants to change that, and that's the real key, does she want to change that? But at some point, if she wants to change that, then she has to come face to face with not only the question, why is it that I keep attracting these people into my life who beat me? But even more importantly, what is the mind shift I have to make in order to stop attracting these people into a life, into my life, which means start attracting people in who treat me well?
And that's
what, and what, in fact, what does that look like? What does a person look like who treats me well?
And understanding that, because and really living it and really tuning into it, because that, and this is another situation where society says, okay, now you're being cruel because you're blaming the victim here. No. No one should ever beat a woman. I don't know of anybody, you know, anybody in the world that's going to claim that's a good thing. However, when you keep finding men, I've had moments where women have angered me horribly. I have never, ever laid a hand on a woman, period. I don't do that. It's not my thing. My peer group doesn't do that. So to go find five men that in a row or however many that literally beat you, you have to be looking for that.
On some level, conscious or unconscious.
Yes, and by no means, and she doesn't see it, but this is where the law of attraction can really come into play. When you see patterns, and then you need to break patterns in your life, this is how you break out of it. I've heard of a woman who was abused that give a talk about the law of attraction, and she said, look, I didn't realize, I kept playing the role of victim, and she said, what am I doing that, you know, the last four men that I've ran across have all physically abused me. She said, at some point, I have to take some responsibility myself.
Wow, what a powerful statement that is.
Yes, and that's where we stand with pretty much all this. And it's such a, and again, it's a difficult message because people get into, well, that's not fair, or that's you're making blame on the victim, and it's not what
not
I'm trying
fair.
To say.
How much more fairness do you want than a person being empowered to say, I changed the way I think, and therefore I deserve better results? How much more empowerment do you want to give a person?
Well, that's the key, is they have the power and within them. Everybody listening to this has the power to make these changes when they keep finding themselves in redundant negative patterns. The problem is accepting your role in it and how your thought process has evolved you in it and changing that thought process. That's all it takes. It sounds so incredibly simple, and it's probably the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life. But once you're able to do it, you realize you have access to this unlimited power.
And by the way, if you don't really want to try it in a situation where it's life or death and where it's getting beaten up or whatever, you can always try it with things like, you know, the weather,
exactly.
Which is what we started this whole thing off with. That's why studying the weather is cool, because the consequences of getting it wrong are pretty minor.
Exactly. And the weather is a great analogy for these other issues, and it doesn't carry as much a charge and emotion attached to it.
And it's fun, too, because the first time that you influenced the weather and you know you did, you say, oh, wow, look what I did.
That helps a lot. That does help a lot when you realize you have that power.
Joel, it's been great. As usual, we used up our hour, and it just flies on by. But thank you so much for spending the time.
It was great to talk to you again, Walt.
And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.